Well, hello there to all of our automotive enthusiast friends and storytellers and story listeners. You've done it again. You hit that go button on another
Trig episode of V8 Radio, Kevin.
Trig. All right. Like trigonomic?
Well, you would think, but no. In this case, it is neat and smart in appearance.
Wow. You grabbed somebody else's word.
Did I? I did, I mean. Clearly.
Yeah, well, you know.
Two guys with faces for radio.
That's
smart,
right.
And neat in appearance.
Perfectly. Well, that's good. Well, welcome to this yeah, trigonomic has a different meaning. So welcome to this trigtastic episode of V8 Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Ostie, joined as always by our esteemed co-host, Mr. Mike Hubal Clark.
How's it going, my man?
It's going.
We have a lot to cover today.
I know. I hope everybody's ready for this.
Oh, man. It's going to be a marathon episode.
Well, when I say everybody, I hope I am.
We're all ready for it. It's going to be great.
Right. So, a couple things real fast. Our listeners know, who have heard this more than once, that we start each episode with an automotive-themed trivia question. And before we dive into the automotive-themed trivia question, I'm gonna throw something out there. I'm gonna propose a kind of a contest, if you will, to our loyal listeners. Maybe they can help us out.
Okay, cool. All right, Let's do it.
All right. So I think somebody has recently cracked the algorithm on Apple Podcasts.
Oh.
And in order to be at the top of the heap, it's certainly not about the quality of your show.
Well, that's true, because if it was,
we wouldn't
be
anywhere.
Number one.
Yeah, thousand. And it's not necessarily about the number of subscribers you have on the Apple Podcast, but what they do is they look at, like, if you accumulated a bunch of subscribers in a short period of time. That's what they look at. So they think if you get a spike in followers and subscribers, that your show must be good. Otherwise, they wouldn't subscribe. So then they move you up to the top. So we have, we've been doing this show for a long time. We've got a lot of episodes, got a lot of people that like to listen, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
We appreciate you letting us share time in your ears. For the sake of dynamics, what the little experiment contest thing is, you know, people listen to this on a variety of different podcasting platforms,
right?
Podcast Addict, Spotify, you name it, down the list. About half of them, according to our latest data, about half use the Apple platform.
Okay.
And I'm not asking anybody to convert to an Apple platform and, you know, if you got something you dig, stay with it. However, if you don't mind, when you hear this episode and if you're not an Apple subscriber, zip over there and hit the subscribe button. And
Perfect.
Then you don't really have to do anything else. But we're just going to see if we can move the needle and rise to the top once again.
Oh, I love it. I'm ready to be back on top on this thing.
Well, and so our rating tends to spike right after an episode. People tune in, pick up some subscribers, but we'll just see what happens. And really, there's nothing in it for anybody. and not even us. It's just outside of saying, hey, look, cool, thank you.
Yeah, that'll be neat to see if it works, though. That'll be a neat experiment.
Yes, and if it doesn't, then the algorithm has definitely changed.
Yes, it's the algorithm.
Right.
Absolutely.
For sure.
All day.
All right. Okay, so we got that out of the way. Back to our automotive-themed trivia question. Mm-hmm. Have you prepared one for this episode?
Indeed, sir, indeed. All right, so Kev and listeners who have just subscribed on Apple Podcasts, I ask you. So, Kevin,
it now has a sound, by the way. Bing,
bing. There we go. Perfect. Between this episode and our last, I spent a little time in Mexico. Our company had our company paid trip to Cabo San Lucas.
Right on. Congrats for that.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. Good stuff. And saw a lot of cars out there, and it got me wondering. I know that a lot of automakers produce cars in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
But, Kevin, which U.S. automaker was the first to set up an assembly plant in Mexico? And for the bonus, what year?
Oh, boy. This is a U.S.-owned company, an American.
Correct. Yes. Right. U.S.
Because I know, like, Volkswagen was down there in Central America forever. Yeah. Not them, though.
Nope.
I could tell by your sigh. Okay. I don't really know. I don't know a whole lot of the history of the south of the border American cars that are built in other countries. I've seen some really cool stuff. I've seen some Chrysler products that exist down there that don't exist here. Some Ford products, some General Motors. The General Motors stuff seems to be fairly similar, but Ford had a lot of different platforms, four-door pickup trucks and Bronco-type things that were not available here in the States. And here's another interesting thing about that. Because of the safety regulations and the emissions regulations and the regulations being different, and typically in Mexico and in Central America in particular and South America, those regulations were behind the United States. Cars that were no longer legal here were legal down there still.
Correct. I'm going to give you a little direction on this, and I'm going to say it doesn't necessarily have to be a car that was meant for the Mexican market. So it could have been a car produced in Mexico, but for the U.S. market.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
I didn't want you to get hung up on that. That's all.
Yeah. Well, now I am. But thanks.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Well, but the point of that whole spiel was that sometimes you would see vehicles that you haven't seen in the United States in a long, long time, but a brand new one in those other countries because they continue to.
Yeah, well, the VW Beetle, air-cooled Beetle, is a great example of that. That was gone to the United States in 79, and they were produced into the 2000s in Mexico for the Mexican market.
And then the VW, the van, became largely water-cooled down there, and they had a grill on the front with a radiator.
Nice.
Yeah, it was different, you know. Surprised you didn't see any of those because they're still down there. But you probably couldn't see on your whole trip anyway.
Well, you know.
All right. So a car, and you're trying to muddy the waters by saying maybe it was a U.S. car that ended up down there for sale. Who and when? I'm going to say Ford.
Okay.
And I'm going to say 1954.
1954.
And I don't really.
FOMO Co., the man says.
El Fordo. I really don't have a. I don't have a mental image of a Mexican 1954 Ford, but I'm just throwing it out there.
Okay. Final answer?
That's it, man.
Okay. Duly noted, sir.
There you go. Well, that was fun.
Yeah, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, those cars are interesting, man. And we have a lot of, on VATV, on our YouTube channel, we have a lot of viewers from South America, Central America. And people will they'll send me emails all the time of, like, you know, Dodge Darts from the 80s that look like darts from the early 70s, but they've got rectangular headlights and, you know, different trim and stuff you could never get.
That's pretty killer.
Almost as cool as the Australian variants.
Right.
Of cars you can't get here. The Falcon XAs and all those cool cars. And I just love to see something different. You know, it's like some of the Australian muscle cars have all the same attributes of their U.S. counterparts, just a different body style. But the timing, the time frame's the same. So the type of trim around the windows and V8s and rear drive and all that stuff. And I know you'd pull up. And not just the Mad Max, you know, Falcon, but you'd pull up in some of these Holdens and other cars and people would be like, dude, check out that Chevelle, but wait, it's not.
Right. You know? Right.
And that's neat.
That is neat. It's pretty good stuff.
All right. My question to you is very simple. Doesn't matter what country you're in.
Oh, man. Here it comes.
As you know, I've been working in the garage, doing stuff on the cars and using tools and supplies. So what does RTV stand for?
What does? Are you gotta be kidding me, dude?
No. When you're putting a gasket on and sealing up your water pump and whatnot, and you smear on some RTV, what is it?
Yeah, well, RTV will typically go by its brand name quite a bit. The most popular brand name, and that would be Permatex. Quite a few variants of Permatex
JB Weld
RTV
makes one.
Products. Do they? I didn't know that.
And there's a whole bunch of them, but anyway.
Anyway, so the deal is when you make these gaskets with this stuff, you want it to stay pliable and not dry up and crack and in different temperature conditions.
It sounds like he knows the answer, friends. Here it comes.
So I'm going to say, Kevin and listeners, RTV stands for Room Temperature Vulcanizer.
Oh, so close. I mean, sure. Great.
Yeah. Well, come on.
I mean, is that your final answer?
Yes. You're the worst.
Yeah, I am. All right. Room Temperature Vulcanizer.
Yep.
All right. If you say so, we will find out at the end of the show.
Yardley, put the win on the board right now.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Oh, boy. Okay, so you alluded that we had a lot to talk about, and I think you're right.
Yeah, man. I mean, you've been doing a lot of stuff. You've been doing some traveling. You just got back from a pretty cool show.
For sure. The Grand National Roadster Show. The granddaddy of them all.
The granddaddy. Now, this is not your first trip to that show, is it?
No. In fact, so this year it was held in Pomona again at the Pomona Fairplex and all the buildings down there in Southern California. Mm-hmm. And it used to be the Oakland Roadster Show held much farther north in California. And a few years ago they changed it and brought it down the state. So I've been to the Oakland version and to this version.
Okay.
And it's a great show.
Cool, man. So, all right, moving on.
Home of the AMBR, the America's Most Beautiful Roadster Trophy Award. Home of the Al Sloniker Award, who is the gentleman that started the event.
Cool.
Which is very similar to the Don Riddler Award over at the Detroit Autorama, named after him. And again, we're very, very impressed, A, that the show happened. I'm glad that it did. And people were holding out. They had a couple years of time to put some cars together, and they brought them out, man.
Did they really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I actually shared a photo gallery on the V8 Radio Facebook page.
Yes,
you did. If you want to go check them out, a small sampling of the variety of stuff. And it was really cool because that's it's a hot rod show and a custom show. And I do a lot of muscle car events and, some four-wheel stuff. And to go to the most legit custom and hot rod show in the world, it was the 83rd annual.
Holy cow.
Yeah. It was cool. And the quality's there for sure. And what's, really neat is to see how these different builders are able to apply technology to make the cars and customize them. And it used to be like technology in a classic car was digital gauges,
right.
And then it was fuel injection. But today it's one-off wheels that are, CNC made and grill parts. And we saw a chopped coupe that the interior window frame was 3D printed, it was easier to do it that way. So, lots of neat tech that is going into an old envelope and staying old looking.
That's cool, right. Man.
Right.
So I like that.
That was really neat. Got to see a lot of friends, a lot of people. Our friends from ARP were there, and Steve Watt from Maxwell Industries, the Speed Demon crew. They had the original Speed Demon soft flat car on display in the ARP booth, and Jeff Smith and Steve Strope, and you know, the list goes on and on of builders that we bumped into. And it was fun because Kelly and I went as spectators and just kind of knocked around. And
that's got to be so liberating. You can just be free, and you don't have an agenda, and you can just take everything in.
It was funny because I was waiting in line. So I went Friday and Saturday. Kelly went and saw some people that she used to work with when we lived in Southern Cal on Friday. So she was out cruising around, and I'm waiting in line. I went to O'Reilly's Auto Parts and bought a ticket at the advanced sales, and you had to either show a COVID test or a vax card. Mm-hmm. So I'm waiting to get through that. And there's people in the show, exhibitors and whatnot, coming out for whatever reason to go get something. And four or five people are like, "Hey, Osti, you know, come on in." I said, "Well, I'm in line." "Well, did you get your press pass?" "No, not this time." Did you need me to get you one? We got it. No.
It's no, all man, good, I'm, man. I'm cool, bro.
I'm spectating, you know. It's like I've been to a lot of car shows, and it's good to pay for one and help the cause, you know.
Sure, man.
I wasn't promising them any kind of, you know, work or press out of it. And look, they're getting it, actually, now that I think about it. But that's all good, you know.
Curses, foiled again.
No, it's a great event, needs to continue. It was kind of fun. It was a little bit unnerving to just not have an agenda, but saw it all at our own pace, so it was great.
Very nice, man. How was the crowd out there?
Friday was, you know, it's hard to say. I would say light, but for a COVID year, it was good. Mm-hmm. And then Saturday was jammed. There's a lot of people.
Nice.
Yeah, lots of people.
Very cool, so, man.
Good turnout. Vendors were happy.
So what car won the America's Most Beautiful Roadster Award?
It was a 34 Chevy Roadster. That is amazing. It's blue, and the builder's name escapes me, believe it or not. I didn't spend a whole lot of time looking at that car because I was trying to take it all in, but it was dynamite. And the range of cars in that competition, this was a pretty high-tech version. Again, the grill was, you know, CNC'd, and a lot of pieces were made for it. But right next to it was a 32 Roadster that had been built in, like, 1960 and was recently restored, just repainted and cleaned up, and it looks identical to the way it used to.
Wow.
And that was a competitor as well. And they had a couple of neat pieces of certificates of authenticity, if you will. Mm-hmm. They had a magazine cover with the car on it from, you know, 62.
Oh, nice.
And then they had an album cover by a surf rock group called The Astronauts.
No kidding. Right on.
And that car, and I believe the McMullen Roadster, the black 32 that belonged to Tom McMullen of McMullen magazine fame, those two were on the cover. And I'm like, this is awesome. And Kelly's like, well, you like that because it says Astronauts. And I'm like, well, yeah, but I mean.
It doesn't hurt.
No, but it was a really neat picture of these two Roadsters. And on the way home, I jumped on the Spotify, and I found out that record, it's called Competition Coupe by the Astronauts, is available on Spotify. And I listened to it all the way home.
Get out of here.
Yeah, right and on. A great recording. Yeah.
Really?
And they're like, I don't know anything about this band, but they sound very much like, car, surf, rock, Beach Boys.
Okay.
So they've got songs like, you know, similar to Little Deuce Coupe, but there's one called, I think it's called Little Ford Roadster. And, some things
love
that. But great musicianship, great harmonies, interesting arrangements. I don't know why they didn't make it, but maybe they were just kind of manufactured by a label to to capitalize on the scene, but they're worth it. So go check out the Astronauts on Spotify. You'll dig them.
Cool, man. We'll do. Let's take a note of that right now. The Astronauts. Very nice.
Yeah. So then Saturday. So there's a couple of different things that happened. So it was a big weekend in the automotive enthusiast world all the way around, because everybody's watching their phones, watching the Barrett Jackson auction.
Yes. Good heavens.
Oh, man, yeah, right. Good heavens is absolutely correct.
Yeah, so what was there, a $500,000 Grand National sold?
Yes, which I believe was the last Grand National
last
built.
Last one produced, yeah.
And it was in the Black Air documentary, right? In the movie?
I think so, yeah.
I think so, too. Here's a number for you. So in January, at the two major auctions, being Mecum and Barrett Jackson, $420 million worth of cars were sold.
Good Lord, man.
Almost $500 million of classics, hot rods, muscle cars, and performance cars were sold at two events.
Two events.
Yep.
Now, if that doesn't tell you how healthy the car world is, I don't know what does or what
I
will.
I think it's absolutely awesome.
Yeah, I
was
love
so
it.
Excited. Yeah, Mecum did $217 million and Barrett did $203.
Jeez, good gravy, man. There's a lot of juice in those numbers.
For sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, $201 was fees, but... But, you know, the Hero Honda Merc was at the Grand National Roadster Show, so you and I got to see it in Chicago.
Right. Yep.
And then the new owners... who purchased it at Mecum, brought it out to the Grand National Show, which I've learned is the Galpin Autosports Group.
That's who bought it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So there's Galpin Ford and some dealerships in Southern California, but they also have the Autosports deal, which is a museum and custom cars and a bunch of stuff.
Okay.
So from what I understand, it's going to remain on public display in the Galpin Museum thing.
That's very cool. I'm glad they're doing that.
It's perfect. It's not going to leave its home of SoCal. People are going to be able to see it, you know, kind of where it belongs. So that's really cool.
That is cool.
That was $2 million of that, you know, 420 right there.
Yeah, we got to spend some good quality time with that Hero Honda Merc at the McCacken show.
We did.
That was real nice. I mean, no after hours, no crowds around, and got to shoot a lot of video and really, really take it in. It's a really, really beautiful car.
It really is, and you can hear you know my spiel on that in the V8 TV video that we did that you helped shoot, and you know, do you look at it differently now that it brought home $2 million?
A little bit, yeah, a little bit.
I was expecting a giant crowd around that thing now of people that were just there to see what a $2 million custom car looks like.
I see.
And you know what? There was a giant crowd around it of people that just dig it.
Well, that's even better.
It was better.
Yeah.
There was no gimmicky, you know, hey, step right up, you know, and none of that.
See the $2 million Hero Honda Mercury, everybody.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that could have happened, but it was not. It was. And sometimes it was all by itself, you know, and people were just kind of checking out the other cars.
Nice.
And at one point... For a super double whammy shot of awesomeness, the Hero Honda was 30 feet away from Eric Estrada.
Oh, nice. Frank Ponchirello.
That's right. Our friend Von Hot Rod, the pinstriper, had a booth just right down the alleyway there from the Hero Honda, and he had Estrada in his booth signing autographs and
no
hanging
kidding.
Out. Yeah, it was cool.
Oh, I would have loved to have seen him. That'd be great.
It was great. He
Man,
was.
Man, I loved that show when I was a kid.
Everybody did.
Yeah.
Great big smile. Everybody having a great time. Everybody loved to see him. It looks great. You know?
Does
it looks
he?
Like he just walked off the set. Yeah.
Man.
40 years ago, I guess, by
yeah,
now. You know?
He's got to be 80 years old now, for Pete's sake.
He probably is. Pretty close. Yeah, I'd imagine. So that was cool. But what's not cool is, you know, a lot of this commentary that I'm seeing of the social media people commenting on the cars and the prices they're getting at the auctions. And like you alluded to, I am super happy that you know, super high level of transactions and values are being demonstrated. Mm-hmm. Because I've said this before, if the minute these things lose all their value, we're sunk.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
And there's all the doomsday naysayers that, oh, there's a bubble and blah, blah, blah. Who knows? Could be, maybe not. They seem to consistently hold value, not necessarily some of the peaky cars that have been, you know, some go up, some go down. But overall, right, the sport, the hobby, if you will, is very healthy. And would it be great if you could buy an LS6 454 four-speed convertible 70 Chevelle for $12,000? Yes.
Neat. Yeah.
It'd be the best. Mm-hmm. I would go buy, you know, as many as you know, one. As many as I can afford.
Same, brother, same.
Yeah, right. We could pool together and get one. All the companies that make parts for these cars, and you know, from the top level restoration parts companies that specialize in manufacturing for parts for those cars, and good Lord, we just got a visit from Kelly. Did you just blow my ear?
Special guest, Kelly Osti.
Yeah. What the heck was that?
I was trying to sneak up and make faces at Mike without you knowing.
Well, now I know.
Busted.
What did you do? I heard this.
I started laughing.
You blew on my headphones, and like the noise canceling thing made this whoosh sound.
How do I get sound on the TV?
How do I get sound on the TV? Today's trivia question.
You'll find out at the end of the show, Kelly.
You gotta push. Push the button on the box on the bottom.
Okay.
And then there's a knob, not this big, but like this big. Uh-huh. And it's like right here.
Yeah.
Just keep turning it until you hear something.
Sorry to interrupt.
Very technical diagnosis there.
Yeah.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen.
Click the button. Press the thing. Get the clicker.
The lovely and talented Kelly Osti, by the way. Operations manager.
Right on. An all-around cool gal.
That's right. Like I was saying, these companies that make these parts, you know, they wouldn't be making these parts if there was no money in the cars. Nobody would be right, working on them and building them. And not just the restoration parts. You know, I'm holding a Timken seal that works on my 70 Riv.
Mm-hmm.
The replacement parts would go away.
Yeah, that's true.
You wouldn't be able to get bearings and water pumps and, you know, RTV to seal them up and all that stuff.
If
the market fell out of it. So you don't want to be in a sinking ship of a hobby.
True.
Worthless hobbies are hard to enjoy and grow. And there's a lot of people that work in this industry, and they all have jobs because of this. And so when you see people that say, oh, yeah, you know, that guy's got more money than brains. All right. So do you remember the old fortune cookie gag where you put something at the end of the fortune cookie? And for a long time it was the phrase in bed.
Oh, right. Yes.
You know, so it's like, you will have a great day in bed.
In bed.
You know, right, whatever. I think a lot of these social comments need the phrase, in my case, added to the end of them, right? So,
yeah.
You know, if I say it was dumb to spend $2 million on the Hero Hada Mercury, in my case, because I don't have $2 million, right?
Right.
So that would be a dumb move. But somebody does and did.
Yep.
And good.
And good for them.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's saying that you have to spend your own $2 million or whatever you got.
Right.
Do whatever
exactly
you can. And yes, there's the argument that, oh, well, now all the 51 custom Mercuries built by George Barris are going to be $2 million. <You know?
laughs> How many are left?
Yeah, but, you know, the one that was pretty surprising was an 86 Grand Wagoneer that mm-hmm. sold for $132,000.
Get out of town.
Right, so every person and their brother that has one of those cars that saw that is going to think that they're worth more now.
Well, interesting segue into that. When I was in high school in Texas, a junior in high school, it was still I graduated in 1987. And I was I worked at a Chevy dealer during part of my school for auto mechanics. Was I worked at a dealership to learn how to be a mechanic, and it was a Chevy and Jeep dealer, and they had these Jeep Grand Wagoneers in the service bays being prepped for sale, and I see the window sticker on them, and I thought it was more money than I would ever see in my whole life for one of those. And back then they were $25,000 for a Grand Wagoneer. And now somebody paid $100,000+ for one.
And right, that was a super low mileage mint, you know, example of one, the most pristine Grand Wagoneer probably in the world. And that's why it commanded that price. And it does have a ripple effect on other values. But I think right around this time of year, savvy sellers will, you know, hold their car until the auction fury goes by, and then they'll release it saying, hey, well, you just saw, you know, that Chevelle go for, you know, 110. You could have mine for just a mere 65, whereas 2 weeks ago it was worth, you know, 31.
Right.
So that happens for sure. Yeah. But that's, again, part of the enthusiasm of the sport, the hobby, the industry. Mm-hmm. And if you're smart and you play your cards right and know how to look for stuff, you could still find deals for sure.
You absolutely can find deals. It may not be an LS6 454 Chevelle. It may have been an original six-cylinder car or a small block car, but you can buy it for a heck of a lot less and build the car you really want out of it.
Right. And for, you know, the quote unquote regular guy who, you know, these people are speaking to, an LS6 Chevelle's been out of those people's grasp for a long time.
Yes.
I have not been able to buy an LS6 since the 90s, probably. Mm. You know, even the 80s.
Right.
But like you said, could I go buy a Malibu? For sure. And enjoy it.
Yes. Yes, so all day.
You need those high watermark cars to keep the whole thing afloat. So, again, when somebody is naysaying and, you know, just add, in my case, that's the thing there. So.
Very nice.
Get off that soapbox for a minute. sorry about that. It just rubs me the wrong way, you know. Because, again, another reoccurring theme here is that we have to stick together as enthusiasts.
We absolutely do, yes.
We can't be throwing rocks at each other because there's too many outside forces trying to throw rocks at us. So somebody spent a lot of money on their car, go, hey, cool. Can I see it? Awesome.
Yes.
Would I do it? No. I would do something else. But that's great that you did. That means we're around and party on, Garth. You know,
that is always the attitude I've always had when seeing somebody's, you know, nut and bolt frame off restoration that they've spent untold hundreds of thousands of dollars on. And I look and see what's possible. And I love seeing what somebody, you know, put the time and effort and expense into keeping these cars super nice and keeping them around. I absolutely love it.
And pushing the envelope of creativity and all the cars at the Grand National Roadster Show, man. I mean, none of these are cheap cars.
No, they're not.
You know, and one other aspect of that is that specific phrase, must have more money than brains, man. I don't know anybody that can write a check for $2 million that doesn't have any brains. Right?
Yeah, it's a good point.
You know, there might be a zillionth of a percent of insanely rich people that are dumb as a post, but all the rest of them, probably not. So
yeah, maybe a lottery winner who, you know, would be living in a, you know, a broke down single wide, and you know, nothing against that. If
God bless
you, them. Then God bless you. But it's possible they maybe they play a lottery and they win $100 million, and there you go.
Yeah, and you know what? Good.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you know? Good. And I hope that they don't burn through it and, you know, become destitute again and be able to, you know,
I think the
make the money work for them.
The more money than brains comment really, in my mind, really only applies to those that have maybe an addiction problem or a gambling problem.
Yeah.
And they're out of control. and they spend whatever they got, and everybody knows that's not good. And yeah, do you have an addiction to buying cars? I don't know, maybe. But I think it's a more productive way to spend your money.
Certainly, you can certainly show something for it.
Yeah. All right, anyway. So, Saturday night, or let's see, Friday night at the Grand National Roadster Show was the Grand National Roadster Show Hall of Fame banquet, where they inducted some people into the Hall of Fame. And I did not go to that. Kelly and I have some friends in SoCal that we went out and visited and spent some time with, which was cool.
Cool.
Our buddy Ross is doing a T-shirt design for the V8 Speed and Resto Shop.
Nice.
Which is going to be a series of T-shirts that are pretty cool apparel.
What are the V8 radio ones going to look like?
They're going to be awesome.
Just are they? All right.
Yeah, for sure. They're going to be so awesome. You won't even believe it.
Oh, no way.
It's going to be
dynamite.
You
got to be kidding me.
Huge. Yeah, it's going to be fantastic. part of the lineup and a special part of our V8 Speed Shop online store. But yes, they are coming. You know, because you and I need a couple T-shirts. And
yes.
Then, so Saturday night was the SCTA banquet.
Ooh, now that I want to hear about.
That was fun. It was interesting. The SCTA, of course, is the Southern California Timing Association. And they're the organization that puts on the land speed racing events at El Mirage and at Bonneville, and they have an awards ceremony essentially at the Grand National Roadster Show Saturday night at the banquet. And this was also like the 83rd or 4th year of it, because that organization's been around a long, long time. And Kelly and I bought tickets for that, and we were probably the only, you know, really non-active land racing participants there.
Is that right?
Or people that are like directly connected to it. There was a big room, a lot of people there, hundreds, you know.
Cool.
But it was really neat for me just to know that, you know, you could just buy a ticket and go. I mean, that was really cool.
That's pretty cool.
And for a guy who's, you know, I'm getting further and further into the land speed racing thing. I don't want to say I'm in the scene, but I'm definitely an enthusiast, and I think it's really cool. And I'm just trying to get close to it as much as I can and learn and experience everything I can. And we were very much welcomed and had a great time. Banquet, big round banquet tables. So we ended up sitting with our friends from Moon Eyes USA.
Oh, no
and,
kidding.
And Moon Japan. Yeah. So that was really cool. Had a lot of cool Moon stories. Dean Moon Jr. was sitting next to me.
No way. Right on, man.
Yeah, it was neat.
Moon Eyes. Gosh, yeah. I can see the ad now.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're still making aluminum parts in Santa Fe Springs, California. They're machining stuff right here. And I had never heard the whole Japan connection there spelled out so much. But the short version is Dean Moon passed away in 87, I think. Yeah. And, of course, Dean Moon was a racer and a race car builder. He raced a streamliner called the Moonliner.
Nice.
And you know, some roadsters, and built the shop to sell performance parts, and of course the Moon tank, the spun aluminum fuel tanks, and the Moon discs, Moon wheel discs, and fuel distribution blocks and valve covers, and you know, a lot of cool speed parts. And the Moon logo has the two eyes, you know, with the word Moon. And those were given because Dean Moon was also a heck of a photographer. And everybody, you know, was commenting that this guy's everywhere. You know, Moon sees everything.
Nice.
So that's where the eyes came from.
Ah, okay.
So if you thumb back through the pages of, you know, Rod and Custom and Hot Rod and Car Craft from the 50s and 60s, there's a lot of photos by Dean Moon in there. You know, he contributed.
No kidding.
a lot, yeah. And he was one of the founders of SEMA. He's in the SEMA Hall of Fame. Yeah, just tremendously instrumental to not just, you know, racing, but hot rodding and you know, an early aftermarket performance part manufacturer and, mm-hmm. you know, just a pioneer. But apparently when he passed away, a gentleman from Japan bought the company, and Moon products are distributed all over the world. And Japan was one of their biggest markets. The Japanese love, you know, hot rods and Americana. And you remember in the 80s, you know, there was always the joke that, you know, the Japanese were buying Hawaii and they were buying Las Vegas and, you know, Japanese investment in this country was really huge. Well, mm-hmm. I guess part of that was the purchase of Moon. But interestingly, all the parts are made here.
Really?
Because in Japan, you need authentic U.S. parts to be cool.
Right on. I love it.
It is. It's very cool.
Love it.
And in the facility in Japan, I believe it's in Yokohama, they have an American 50-style cafe, and then they've got a showroom of the parts, and then they've got the Moon Global headquarters up on the top floor. And
wow, that's cool.
Part of the deal was that for as long as that company existed, Dean Moon Jr. had a spot.
Is that right?
Yeah, so he doesn't, from what I gather, doesn't do a whole lot, you know, with directing the business, mm-hmm. but he comes in and hangs out with the machines and talks to people and spends time there.
Oh, he's probably a celebrity.
For sure. It's cool. So that was really neat, you know. In addition to that, again, our friends from ARP, Chris Rashke, who is mm-hmm. on the Speed Demon crew and actually drove that car this year, he was there. Once again, Steve Watt from Maxwell Industries that built that chassis and built the car. He was sitting behind me. And I had to be careful because I slid my chair back to get out and go use the restroom and darn near bumped into Ed Iskenderian.
No way.
Sitting right behind me.
Iski. 100-year-old Iski.
Yeah.
That's killer.
He was doing good. So as he walked in, you know, said hi and shook my hand and the whole thing. And that banquet is long.
Is it?
They have a lot of awards to give away. There's records in all these different classes. And we had talked before about how the SCTA has so many different classes.
That's right.
And the ceremony, they don't just stand there and say, all right, Mike Clark with his, you know, GTO in the A gas coupe class, mm-hmm. here's your trophy. No, they talk about that you beat the record by 9 miles an hour and you had this, you know, challenge and whatnot throughout the course of the season. So it takes some time to get through the whole presentation. Mm-hmm. Iski wasn't really ready to sit through the whole thing. So.
No, man. Oh,
After
boy,
dinner, he was like, I think I'm out of here.
All right, deuces, everybody.
Yeah, and because he probably has more records than everybody that was there anyway, you know, mm-hmm. over the years. So that was pretty cool. And our friend Ron Main, who is the media guy for the SCTA, he was there helping us out. And funny guy. He's going to be 80 this year.
Oh, cow.
He was a record holder with the world's fastest flathead, which was a streamliner called Flatfire. You remember seeing that one?
I don't, unfortunately.
Yeah, Ford flathead motor, and it was actually a Ford flathead. Today, I think the flathead record is held by a billet aftermarket block
sure.
and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But Flatfire evolved into the very first Speed Demon, and it was Ron Main and George Poteet as the team.
No kidding.
And then from there, Poteet moved on to the second Speed Demon and now the one that you see racing today. So
right.
Ron's been in that forever. And we're talking about doing some stuff with the SCTA this year, which would be pretty
Are
cool.
Are we?
Yeah, yeah.
Do tell. Let the cat out of the bag, man.
Well, nothing's finalized. It's darn uh-huh. close. But I looked at this like I'm an enthusiast, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm a guy who just likes to be around this stuff. I'm not a racer. I don't build cars for the for the salt or the, you know, El Mirage dirt race. Mm-hmm. So what can I do? Well, really what I can do is what we're doing right now.
Okay. You know,
tell the stories, share the info. So we're looking at maybe doing the official SCTA podcast.
Get out of here. Right on, man.
Yeah. Which I think would be awesome, you know, and we've landed on a list of topics of, you know, racers and engine builders and land speed racers and legends, to tell the stories and everything from how to's, how do you get involved, to explaining the classes and the rules and then actual coverage of some of the events. And eventually maybe morphing into doing their live video stream as well from the salt.
Solid.
So, yeah. Yeah, it's cool.
Oh, that'll be real cool. Good it's for you, very man. Cool. That's killing.
Yeah. So we'll see how it shakes out. We'll definitely let everybody know here. I'm excited about it. And everybody I've talked to is like, it's kind of funny because they're like, you mean you don't do that already? Which is cool that, you know, they're not like, no, you have to go home.
Right.
So that was fun too. And a tremendous honor to even possibly have the chance at doing this. So there's that. And the other fun one, it was a heck of a weekend, man.
Yeah, man. Sounds like it.
So you and I have talked at length about my obsession with Cadzilla and how much I dig that car and how it'd be great to put something together with the stories of the people that are around it that worked on it and built it and photographed it and all that stuff. Well, when you and I were at the McCacken show in Chicago, do you remember the gentleman, Dwayne, who came up to me who used to work with Boyd and said, "Hey, I got something for you."
Yes.
I don't think anybody can. Don't say anything. Keep this under your hat.
It's all say between me and you, man.
Yeah.
I mean, no one's listening anyway.
No, exactly. that's why it's okay. But he sent me a DVD of video footage of Craig Knaff building Cadzilla.
Get out of here.
I know.
Whoa.
Get out of here.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's insane. And apparently somebody hired a crew to document the build of the car back in 89. And the footage exists. I have it. It's on my laptop right now.
Holy cow.
I know.
Oh, man.
And I don't know who owns it yet. I'm trying to find out who owns the footage so that if this, you know, documentary project, if you will, comes to fruition, we'll have to include that. I mean, nobody's ever seen this, I don't think.
Yeah, for sure. Does Dwayne know who owns it?
I don't know.
Okay.
He was very gracious with sending me the copy of it, and part of me didn't really believe it until I got it. You know?
Well, sure.
Because people are like, "Yeah, sure, I got
people
that."
Talk,
you know.
Yeah. Hey, I got this DVD. It's got all the footage of the build. Yeah, I'll get it right to you. Hey, thanks, bub. Never to be heard from again.
Yeah, and then it shows up.
Yeah.
And it's true. And it's Knaff, you know, working the English wheel and cutting and welding and pounding and some great shots of the car that nobody's ever seen before inside. And
oh, my gosh.
I know.
Jaw was just dropped to the floor.
It is. It's like, it's kind of mind-bending. So that was, you know, kind of a sign that it's like, well, maybe you need to get back on this project a little bit. Because It's always been kind of floating around in my mind, but, you know, this needs to be shared. So, Friday night, Kelly and I were getting ready to go to the to go see our friend, and the Hot Rod or the Grand National Hall of Fame banquet's about to start. And I'm walking out of the Sheraton Hotel in Pomona, and Kelly's gonna come pick me up in the front circle. And as I start walking out, and you remember, you know, another thing that kind of popped up was about 3 weeks ago, I found the business card that Billy Gibbons gave me.
Yes.
On the Power Tour in like 2001 or 2002, whatever it was. And it's a really cool business card. It's kind of frayed around the perimeter, and it says Gibson friend of Eric Clapton.
Yes.
On the card, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. With his contact info. And at that point, I'm like, you know, I really should try to reach out to him because Jack Chisenhall, who, you know, is the owner of Vintage Air and the guy who was the project manager, basically, on Cadzilla and a friend of Gibbons, I asked him at the SEMA show if he'd be interested in helping us out on this little video project. And he's like, well, if Billy says yes and gives you his blessing, then I'll be in, you know. So it started to sound like I need to talk to the Rev.
Mm-hmm.
So I find the card, but the contact info is out of date.
Ugh.
Right. And what am I going to do? Just call him up. Hey, Billy.
Yeah. You know? Yo, Billy, Kevin, let's talk. Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
You remember, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. How crazy is that?
I was the guy back then. You gave me the card.
You gave me
the
card.
Thing. We were doing the thing.
That's it. I did an interview. Remember we talked about the thing, you know, high ride and all that stuff. So I had sent you a snapshot of that business card.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in my phone. I'm walking out of the Sheridan, and I look up, and here comes Gibbons.
Boom, baby! Yes, I knew we were going to get something out of this.
I know. It's only been, you know, 49 minutes, but we're there.
I've been biting my tongue this whole time, trying to wait to ask this question.
Yes. So he's walking towards me, and I'm like, oh, boy, how am I going to do this? So I grab my phone, and I think, maybe having the image of his business card that he gave me might release me from him thinking I'm some crazy stalker weirdo.
Right. It'll legitimize you a bit.
Yeah, because he doesn't remember who I am. There's no way. So as I'm you know, fumbling through the phone, I'm trying to find this, and him and his manager they walk right by.
No! No!
And he was there because he was being inducted into the Hall of Fame. That night he was a guest of honor, so he goes by, and I finally get the picture up, and I look, and he's like 10 feet away, and I'm like, oh man,
what do I do, I
missed it, you know, what do I do? And I thought, you know what, you go after him. That's
yes, Kevin, right? Yes.
So yes. I turn around and I walk into the Sheraton lobby, and now there's a whole bunch of people, and there's people kind of walking up to him, and I'm like, you know, 10 feet behind him, and I'm holding my phone, and I probably have this half crazed look in my eye. and some guy says to him from the hotel, no, the ballroom's not open yet, but you know, if you go over there, you know, and points down the hall. And he goes, all right, thanks. And the two of them just beeline down the hall. And I don't really see where they go. And I'm thinking, ah, man, they backdoored him into the ballroom so that they didn't have to deal with weirdos like me.
Well, you know.
Fair enough, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm like, ah, man, you know, so close again. But then I thought,
no.
The hell with that. Let's
yes!
go find out where he went.
Yes, Kevin, yes! Yes!
So I'm walking down the hallway of this place, and I'm not staying there. I've never really been through this hotel very much. And at the end of this hallway, you can either turn left and go down to another conference room or whatnot, but there's the bathroom.
And that's where I'm camping out.
That's where I'm going, baby.
So there's a knock on the stall door. Mr. Gibbons?
Reverend?
Can I talk to you?
Your holiness?
Oh, love it.
I got my phone, and I kind of blow through the door, and sure enough, his manager is standing in the bathroom, and the stall over there is closed.
Yes! Please tell me you put your phone under the stall. Hey, Billy, remember this? Remember this? It's me, Kevin. I swear to God.
No, it was weirder than that.
Yes! All right!
So the manager saw me walk in. I don't use the facility, but I got to be there for a reason. So yeah. I go up to the sink and I wash my hands real quick and I look around and Oh, look, there's other people in here, you know?
Oh,
and I go
hey,
and
buddy.
Grab a paper towel, and I'm drying my hands off. And Billy comes out of the stall and starts washing his hands. And I said, hey, how you doing? And he goes, good, yeah. And I said, I know this is kind of strange, meeting here in the restroom.
God damn it, I love it.
But I said, do you remember giving me this? And I pull my phone out and I show him the card. And he looks at it and he goes, wow, well hold on. I got to dry my hands, you know, because I'm getting in his way here unintentionally. Well, he looks over and there's no more paper on the roll.
Oh, damn.
Right? Either I or his manager grabbed the last sheet. So Billy goes, hold on a minute. He turns around, goes back in the stall, and he's pulling toilet paper off to dry his hands, right?
Well, so hey, improvise, adapt.
He is, yeah, right. He's being resourceful, you know, mm-hmm. regular guy. So he comes back and he goes, that's an old card, man. And I said, well, yeah, we were on the power tour, and you were doing a show kicking off at Nashville. And I was working for Hot Rod, and we did a TV interview, and he's like, oh, yeah, right. Yeah, that's cool, man. And I said, yeah, well, you know, thanks for giving it to me. I said, but I don't know, now's not the time, but if you ever get an extra minute, I got a project that I'd like to run past you. I'm not asking you for anything, mm-hmm. you know, except maybe a blessing to say, hey, this is cool. And if you do give me the blessing, Jack Chisenhall said he'd help me out. And he's like, huh, well, all right. And his manager steps in and is like, okay, well, do you have a card or something? And I said, yeah. I gave him one of my cards. And he's like, all right, well, I'm handling all this stuff. So we'll set up a time and I'll get back with you on it. And Billy's like, yeah, make sure you call him. And then they just went off to do their thing.
Ooh,
so we've established contact again.
All right.
Yes.
Has he called you yet?
Well, you know, it's only been a day and a half, so no, not yet.
Keep play it cool, man. Play it cool.
Yeah, go find out what city he's in and go to the bathroom.
Yeah. Just like be there, man. Just like wander around. Oh, hey, Billy. Hey, I didn't know you were going to be here.
Right. What a coincidence. Well, so interestingly, he went off to do the Hall of Fame banquet. And one of the reasons, or another little connection I've had with the Grand National Roadster Show is our friend Lana Chrisman, who was Jack Chrisman's daughter, the racer, legendary, you know, hot rod mm-hmm. racer and builder. She runs the Lyons Automobilia Museum, which is like a museum tribute to the Lyons Dragway in Southern California, which is long gone. And she had contacted me saying, hey, we're sponsoring this show. And part of our sponsorship entitles us to some PA announcements throughout the weekend. Can you record some announcements for us that will play at the show? And I said, sure, absolutely. So I whipped up some script and wrote and recorded and sent it out to her. And it was a little weird hearing myself come across the PA there while I was talking to Lana. So Saturday, so that was all Friday night, the nonsense in the can. Saturday, I go talk to Lana, and she's like, hey, you didn't come to the banquet. I had tickets for you. And I said, yeah, Kelly and I went and saw a friend of ours, and, you know, we had a Friday night booked. And she's like, well, you know, you really should have come. You know, Billy was at our table the whole night because we had a big sponsor, and could have hung out with him. And
Lana, do you have a long rope? Because I'm going to have to hang myself right now.
You know,
thank
but
you.
I
appreciate
could,
that.
Could you imagine after our you know, chance encounter in the mm-hmm. men's washroom?
Not that chance.
Yeah, that well, that you know, Billy sits down at the table and goes, oh, it's you.
You know? Sure you don't want to talk to John?
That's right.
I do all my best talking in the can. Let's go.
Yeah, exactly. Don't use up all the paper next time.
Jag off.
Oh, man. So that's where we are with that, anyway.
Oh, man.
So, you know.
Little steps closer.
Steps closer.
That was a big breakthrough, though. You got to talk to the Reverend.
Yep.
You established communication. He has your information. Hopefully he calls you back soon with all this, and he gives you the blessing. And then, boom, baby, full speed ahead.
That's right.
Damn the torpedoes. We're doing this.
It would be really cool, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like that I didn't have to rely on anybody else to make that introduction.
Yeah. You know,
I didn't have to bother somebody saying, hey, can you call him again and see, you know. Because that's usually how this stuff goes, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, do anybody you over here know Billy Gibbons? Can you call him for me and tell him I want to, you know, no. I'm just going to go right to the can.
And right. I'm just going to go right there.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. That's beautiful.
Well, I was just finishing up that Buzz Aldrin book, and that's part of his thing. He's like, just you got to just go do it. You see something you want to do, go do it.
Sweet. Yeah, I saw a post that Billy Gibbons was at the Grand National Roaster Show. When I saw that, I'm like, ooh, I wonder if Kevin's going to talk to
Yeah,
I got to find out when we do another show. It's going to be great.
Yeah. And especially completely being off the clock. I mean, if I was working for whoever, if I was working for SEMA, then I'd probably have a much better chance, you know. But then he would have been like, you know, is this a SEMA thing? And no, this is just my nonsense.
This is a Kevin thing. Let's do this. Come on.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So it was cool. It was a good weekend.
Nice, man. Oh, that's great, man. You packed a lot of stuff in one weekend. That's good.
For sure, yeah. And, you know, finished it all off today with the new Cartoons magazine showed up in the mail.
Very nice.
So, yeah, if you don't have that, go subscribe. That's a good one.
That is a good one. I found one on the newsstand a little while ago that I picked it up. And I looked, I'm like, oh, my gosh, I remember this stuff. This is great.
Yeah, it's cool. And some of the artists from back in the day are still doing it.
Mm-hmm.
George Trosley and Steve Austin and a lot of these guys. So that's cool.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Yeah. Real cool, man.
All right.
Well, I didn't have as much excitement as you did, but I'm glad you got all that in there. So I'm glad you got to go to the show and you got to finally make contact with the Reverend, and hopefully this thing starts getting legs.
Well, you'll hear about it here first.
That's right, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So everybody is waiting. They're thumbing through dictionaries and encyclopedias online to learn about the Mexican motors. Right.
Breaking out all their old issues of Funk and Wagnalls encyclopedia.
Right. Funk and Wagnalls.
And Wagnalls. All right. So Kevin, I asked you which U.S. automaker first opened an assembly plant in Mexico, and you said our friends at the Ford Motor Company. And for the bonus, I asked you what year, and you said 1954. You got one of those correct.
I got the Ford part correct.
You got the Ford part correct, sir.
Hey, all right.
So in that case, you are a winner because that is all that was required. And as far as the year, it began, they opened up operations in Mexico in 1925.
25.
Building the Model T.
Yeah, right on.
Isn't that crazy?
So.
And then Ford and GM, or excuse me, GM and Chrysler followed suit shortly thereafter.
Did they export to here? Did we import?
I believe it was importing into the U.S., so building in Mexico for the U.S. market.
Yeah, right on. Yeah. Well, that's cool. All right, I'm a wiener.
You are a wiener.
In your case, the question was far easier. What does RTV stand for?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you said, in alluding to the special sauce you put on gasket sealer, it's got to remain flexible, rubbery. You said room temperature vulcanizer.
That is what I said.
Yeah, and the correct answer is room temperature vulcanizing. You said and it's ing. No, you got it.
I'm going to reach through this phone. You and I are fighting, sir. We're fighting.
No. You won. We both won.
Hey, we're both wieners.
Woo! There you go.
Right, on.
That's outstanding.
Yes, sir. Good stuff. Super softball question. Appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome. Every once in a while, you know.
Yeah.
Because next time, it's brutal.
Oh, yeah. That's the only quarter I think you've ever, the only real super softball you've ever given me.
Yeah. I don't know. Sometimes these things just hit me, and sometimes they're easy. I'm a simpleton, so yeah.
Nice.
All right. Well, hopefully you enjoyed this little episode of V8 Radio. And make sure to keep all that under your hat, because it's not for public consumption yet. And again, play along, if you don't mind, with our little subscribe-a-rama contest on the Apple Podcasts, and we'll see if we can make this thing jump a few notches. That'd be fun. In the meantime, pick your other favorite podcast source to click on and enjoy. Don't forget to check out our V8 Radio Facebook page to see an assortment of the cars from the Grand National Roadster Show. Not like you haven't seen them already, you know, but there's more. A few more to look at, right? Why not?
Right on, yeah.
All right, my man. Got anything else for us tonight?
No, I'm just happy to be here. Thanks for keep having me back.
Oh, you're welcome. And I'm going to have to go figure out how to get sound out of the television now.
You're right on. She's going to be sitting there looking at it like, God dang it, son of a biscuit.
Looking at me, yeah. So for Kelly Oste and for Mike Hubal Clark, I'm Kevin Oste, reminding you to keep all the shiny sides up, and we'll tune in and catch you next time on VA Radio.